We get signal, main screen turn on. You're listening to the radio program about Hacker Spaces. This here little radio program about Hacker Spaces.
Good evening, welcome to Hacktivism Hour on Signal here on Thursday, February 9th, the day where Mubarak told us that he's the father of Egypt and he's not going to resign until the guilty have been punished. Anyway, we're going to do a semi-live show with some pre-recorded interviews as well as a live interview, but first some music.
To tread so tenderly, fight this urge to up and run. I can taste the fingers and the sweet, sweet memory. I count his footsteps one by one. There's more the distance in the A&B. Where do we arrive on time? 'Cause I walk miles and miles each day. That comes to pass. Take a look at something new. Let me a mirror, let me shine it down upon your heart. Maybe change your point of view. There's more to distance in the A&B. Where do we arrive on time? A chance, 'cause it's got to be a way.
Welcome back to the show. You're just listening to the Lewis Lark band with Walking the Wire. We're sitting here in the Rev Space studio in drowsy The Hague with GMC doing the sound techniques. Sitting in front of me is Oki, who is just studio decoration so far. And on my left hand there's Brain Smoke, and it's also studio decoration. We may or may not have them intervene sometime. But just for those people who happen to be watching our webcam, which is cam2.refspace.nl. Anyway, like I said, it's a semi-live show. Our intrepid reporter, GMC, went to a security conference in Toronto and bumped into some interesting people. And Koen?
Yeah, indeed. I went to Toronto, which is always a pleasure. I went to the Control X Ethics Workshop. It was a workshop about the ethics of security research. As such, I cannot disclose too much about who were there and what we talked about, because that was the rule there. I mean, we could speak freely on the condition that no one would bring too much to the outside. Nevertheless, I managed to talk to a couple of people there who didn't mind being named as participants. We didn't talk about the workshop, but about some interesting matters regarding activism and online activism and hacktivism.
So basically it was Chatham House rules?
Exactly, Chatham House rules, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, they're borderline ethical, I would say. Anyway, the first interview, what is it about?
Well, I talked with Robert Guerra. He does a lot on this field, and I talked about the organizations he's involved with and what he's doing with for those organizations.
Shall we just listen to the interview then?
Excellent idea.
I'm one of the founders and the managing director of a very small Canadian NGO called Privaterra that works since about 2000, working around digital security training, particularly with activists in repressive countries or countries where there's human rights issues, particularly Central Latin America. And then for the last 3 years, I've been at Freedom House, where I've helped set up what's called their Internet Freedom Program. And, you know, there we're working on kind of three main topics. One topic is trying to promote anti-censorship tools, and knowledge about them and about censorship issues, particularly in countries where there's problems on the internet. So we don't make the tools. What we do instead is we try people understand how they might want to select from the different types of tools. In some environments where there's a lot of surveillance, you need more privacy or anonymity. There's other countries where you want speed, and so the anonymity may not be as much of an issue.
We're talking about things like Siphon, Tor.
There's a variety of different tools, and so we're going to be soon publishing a report that actually ranks all the different circumvention tools that does a review. We've worked with cartoonists to actually make cartoons about how to make a discussion about digital security and circumvention tools fun. So just more people recognize that it's not just for activists, it's not just for hackers, it's just for anyone. There are some really good reasons why people should use them. So, you know, we try to put it, you know, we've worked with people, we did like a focus group, and so we realized that stories around a family. So a variety of different things. And so that's been a big challenge. And we've not tried to do it ourselves. So what we've done is we've tried to, we've done workshops, we've done trainings, and identify, you know, what are some really interesting activist organizations in different parts of the world, and help them be able to do the projects that they think will advance some of these things.
Okay.
So circumvention. The other thing that we've done is similar to the OpenNet initiative report that does around censorship. We've done a little bit of a broader study called the Freedom on the Net report that actually ranks how free the internet is in different countries. So it's not just censorship, but it's the laws, it's the cost, it's, if you want to set up an internet cafe, if you want to set up a 3G network in the country, how difficult or hard it is, and how able is it for the activists to push the space for democracy and freedom. And so we have a next report coming out soon. In Europe, in our last study, we had Estonia in the UK. And it's more, you know, just to track how that is. So what we found is that there's a lot of countries that people think of being really bad for censorship and where the internet is really challenging, like China, like Burma. But then if you actually look at the results, you'll see that there's other countries that for some reason don't get the same attention, but are far more sophisticated, almost in China. We do a variety of different things. So we do a lot of work around human rights, around democratic development, and we do a lot of reports. So we do other reports on how free the press is around the world. And so, of course, with, you know, there's some strange things around the internet and the press in Europe, particularly in France, but specifically in Italy, where there's just a big media concentration. And so Italy always, it's actually ranked as partially free in our rankings, just because of the terrible things. But one country that, you know, just 2 months ago wasn't really on people's minds, but is now on the press every day, is Tunisia, and not necessarily talking about the democratic reforms that are taking place now. But if we take a look at, you know, what's been happening all of last year, is we've seen some incredibly sophisticated attacks. DDoS attacks against sites that are critical of the government. We've seen phishing attacks to try to harvest websites, passwords, not only of people inside the country, but outside. So some focused malware that gets sent out to activists. We've had activist accounts outside of Tunisia being compromised. And these are activists that are very, very smart, that use, like, you know, according to them, you know, 25 character passwords or, you know, phrases, and using deep packet inspections. So when emails get into Tunisia, they replace the body of the message with malware. And so you think it's coming from your friend. And so very, very sophisticated, because the government really controlled the network. And what's been very fascinating about Tunisia is that you've had, despite a very repressive environment, you've had a group of some people that have been very smart, you know, either documented what's going on. And so one of the Slim, I can't remember his last name, very famous blogger from Tunisia, actually posted a couple blog posts documenting the phishing, documenting the harvesting of passwords, you know, May of last year, and was arrested by the authorities in December. But because of the reforms now, he's the minister for youth and something else as well, too. So he's made it, and he's a member of the Pirate Party.
Things can turn.
So it tells you how things can turn, but also some really interesting activists outside of the country who've been using combination of a video and just really aggregating all the news. And so the space where people have gone to find out what's going on in the country over the last month have been these very smart Tunisian activists, both inside the country and outside as well, too. So it's a place you don't traditionally think, where there's some really smart, both man and woman bloggers talking about the country and aggregating and putting online and doing some interesting things with mapping all the prisons in the country and stuff like that.
So it
tells you that all you need is really some knowledge. And so, you know, for the hacker space as well, too, is just that it may be people in the Netherlands that get together, but, you know, if you open it up to people that may be visiting, they're there for a conference or something like that else, too, you know, 6 months, a year now later, you know, they may really use it for something that's very effective. And so it's just the real sharing that's very important. Another country that people always think about where they think things are really, really bad is Burma. It's always on people's mind. It's just like, oh, the internet's really bad. But what we've seen is, yes, highly restricted environment, but you have bar camps that have 3,000 people. So usually bar camps have 100 people.
Yeah.
And so last year there was a bar camp, and they did another one, or I think they just did one this year as well, too. And so there's the space for people to come together. And there's a really interesting also in Indonesia that's happening now as well, too, where there's an interest to bring, you know, as different, you know, what's different in Southeast Asia compared to Europe and North America. Usually the companies are the bad people. So it's usually how bad Google and Microsoft and others are using our data. From what I've heard from Southeast Asia, it's usually the governments that are bad, but businesses are the allies. They're almost like the NGOs. And so you have some interesting hackers getting together, or computer experts, or however you want to call it, getting together in the Philippines, in Malaysia, in Indonesia, to try to push for more progressive technology laws and policy.
Wow, yeah.
And so, you know, I think what's interesting is whatever you do, you know, in the Netherlands, whatever, all the great work that people are doing in Europe as well, too, you're also a source of inspiration. So, you know, don't just publish it in Dutch. Publish it in English, because people will read it. So I think that's, you know, particularly interesting. And, you know, I'm really keen kind of going forward is, you know, trying to connect the different groups because I think they may be interested in the type of work that you do, because then they push it for their countries. Like, look, this is happening in other places too. It's a space where people come together, and so what you do can actually be inspiring for others as well too. And so I think that's a neat message. So, you know, despite how hard it may be to find a space and what people think, that may be what actually helps you. Because then if you tell whoever it is, you know, in the Netherlands, it's like, yeah, but, you know, we're actually catalyzing progressive groups in other parts of the world. There's like, oh, okay. You know, you're a bit more respectful. So, you know, I think that's a different things. But I think some of the big challenges, I think, going forward over the next year, definitely is, you know, whenever we talk about technology policy or anything that affects, you know, as Lawrence Lessig wrote many years ago, you know, code is law, but law also sets the framework by which what we can do. And so when things get discussed in public, it's great because there can be a very civil discourse. So if people want to, you know, develop a new software tool, they want to develop a new protocol, you go to the IETF, there's a big discussion, there's a consensus, and it moves forward. So everything's done in public. What's very worrisome are technology treaties like ACTA that, you know, Freedom House doesn't follow, but, you know, in Canada they do, and many others, is this has been done in secret. And so I think that, you know, if they want to do a copyright treaty, people may have issues with copyright. But if it's something that affects everyone, it should not be done in secret. And so I think that's something that... a lot of members of the European Parliament have tried to do when they've been given secret briefings. They just publish the documents and they give it to people. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, policy needs to be open, period. Especially if it affects more than one country, if it affects your own country. So I think, you know, you don't, it just is the perception that that's wrong. I mean, government's not in secret, because then we're no different than China.
Yeah. Right. So I hate to cut you off here, but we are running out of time.
Okay.
I have an idea we can talk for hours.
Yes, we probably could.
And, I surely
so
will,
we should meet up. We should meet up in the Netherlands.
Definitely. If you're around, give me a sign. And thank you for talking to me.
It's a pleasure.
And good luck in your efforts.
Great. Thank you.
Well, we haven't run out of time over here yet. Well, it was just mentioned, we're not that much different from China, and there's some truth to that. This Monday, some proposals for mandatory internet filtering will be voted on in the European Parliament. And after the music will start in a few seconds, we'll discuss this with some activists from the Netherlands.
You always start from the always far from the beginning. You never know when you are winning.
Okay, you are listening to From the Beginning by Rick Reed, Tran Hung, Mr. T, Michelle Lloyd and Theo. Well, on the phone we now have Mark Smits, who is organizing some hacktivism, basically, on about the upcoming vote in the European Parliament. Hello, Mark. Welcome on the show.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm fine. You?
Yeah, I'm quite tired. I've been working really hard the past few days.
Let's just explain for our listeners, for most of them probably it's entirely new that this kind of proposal is being tabled. What kind of vote will there be this Monday on the European Parliament?
Well, there's the European Commission wanted to do something about child pornography, and they basically a commission of members of Parliament, the Libe Commission, did some research, and they're working on a proposal right now. And the proposal contains one option, and that is blocking of websites. And I don't think that's a good idea.
And why would it not be a good idea?
Well, basically, if you start blocking websites, the question is, who's going to decide which websites are to be blocked and which are not?
Well,
it's not possible to publish a blacklist with blocked websites. Because then the people that are operating the websites being blocked, they know they're being blocked. So they will just move the website to another location. So you're not solving the problem.
Yeah, okay. But if this will serve to prevent our poor children from bumping accidentally into child pornography, this is a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the thing is, it will not solve the problem. The thing with criminals is, if you take a measure like this, they will find ways around it. And there are ways around it, and it's been proven that there are ways around a blocking system. So basically, if you implement a blocking system, it can be. The risk is that it will be used for all kinds of other activities, like blocking copyrighted works, or blocking maybe some kinds of WikiLeaks kind of things, and basically free speech. That's a risk you're running into.
Yeah, I can see the risk. Recently, I had a bit of an email conversation with an expert in this field, John Carr, who's from the UK government, who's very much in favor of this proposal. And he claims that it will be very hard to circumvent any web filters. And he said, this is not easy for any teenager to circumvent. What would be your take on this?
Well, I've was on Hacking at Random last year, which is a Dutch hacker festival. And I'm not such a technician myself, but I've seen people doing with computers that were just amazing. And I think if people are able to do those things, and we've got criminals, they want to do criminal things on the web, they will find ways to do so. So blocking websites, they will find a way around, because they want to find a way around it.
Yeah, I would agree on that. But bear in mind, I understood you will tomorrow try to kind of carpet bomb the European Parliament, which and there will be politicians, I suppose, will say, well, this is a very difficult subject, etc., etc. And what kind of politicians are you going to call tomorrow?
Well, we're going to call the members of Parliament that are also part of the Libe Commission, because this commission will have a vote on the on this proposal on Monday. And what we're basically going to do is we're going to ask them the question why they want it, and how they're going to vote on the proposal, which they probably are not going to say, but we're going to ask it anyway. Then we're going to say that we're very concerned with the proposal because we're afraid that a blocking system will eventually be used for blocking other types of content than just child pornography.
Are you going to call all the members of the Liebe committee or targeting specific factions? I mean, the Greens and the Liberals so far have been fairly reluctant to do to support any really bad proposals in this respect. Mm-hmm. Aren't you afraid of just annoying some of your potential supporters here?
Well, I know the Greens are they're like on our side, and they're not in favor of internet blocking. And the older group, I don't know exactly how they're in this proposal. I know there are people really against any type of internet blocking. So we'll probably call the Greens anyway, just with a, we'll call one member of parliament to hear what he has to say and really ask him. So we have, our goal is to have a complete list of positions on the end of the day.
Okay, are you going to publish that list?
Yes, we will be publishing the list, basically with the main question, how are you going to vote on the proposal?
Are you aware of the voting lists that are circulating in Brussels as of today?
No, I'm not.
Well, basically, I've been told that the most of the fight on the contents of the various proposals has been done today, and people have told me that I should express many thanks to those who already have been calling members of the European Parliament during this week because about about this. And basically, the voting list, as far as I understand it, is kind of giving an a la carte choice to the committee members on what kind of amendments they want. And the major fight is about judicial oversight of blocking or not. And apparently voting list number 8 contains the proposal which is more or less acceptable to the citizens of the net. But even then it will include blocking, but it will include some form of judicial oversight, I've been told.
Yeah, I know the European Digital Rights was really working on that, on the specifically on the judicial word in that that was taken in, because that would mean there's a judge looking at whether a website should be blocked or not. And what I wonder is how effective is this proposal going to be if you have to have a blacklist with all the websites listed and then have to make this blacklist public because the judge has to be able to look at it. So,
if the list is secret, then you can still have a judge looking at it. Having a judge looking at it doesn't necessarily mean that the list will be published.
No, that could be right. That could be right. basically, my point of view is still that we shouldn't have this blocking system at all, and I think a lot of people would also agree. And then you get some kind of politic thing where you get a sort of a middle way to choose. What I have to say is this whole European politics, I find it quite complicated, in especially not being in Europe, to follow it. So what we're basically going to do is to call them and to say that we are concerned with the filter being implemented instead of going very into the details of the politics that are being played.
You will still probably encounter the argument, yes, but not all countries take down websites with horrible child pornography. But are you going to respond to that statement?
Well, countries should start taking down websites with child pornography. I mean, if they can take down a phishing site for a bank in a couple of hours, why should it take weeks for a child pornography site to be taken down?
Well, the meme in Brussels basically is that awful dictatorships like Burma and countries like that are very slow to respond to takedown requests. And what are you going to do to dispel that myth?
Well, I've seen a publication by the Dutch Ministry of Justice. They had an investigation or an experiment done with child pornography blogging, and they published a report in 2008. And the report stated that a lot of the sites were just hosted in the United States and in Europe. So basically, the report says there are things that can be done, but we're not doing it.
So basically, the police should get off their asses and send out more takedown notices.
Yes, that's what I think. I should. If you get your, we've got international police force, like, and you should sort of make that really, really work, and put up a task force that just focuses on this problem, to start arresting people in different countries that operates these kind of sites, and bring them to trial instead of just blocking it.
Yeah, I think I would agree. Tomorrow you will be calling together with a bunch of volunteers. Is there any coordination with groups like Bits of Freedom involved?
Yes. Well, Bits of Freedom, they really helped out with drawing up a list of questions and providing with information and getting all the getting a position right, and they really helped out with drawing up a press, I don't know, really know the English word for it, a press release, and some contacts. So they've been really helpful, and they're really glad that there are people from the Netherlands involved in trying to stop this web blocking as well.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you as well.
And very glad to have you on the show. We may be in touch later on and try to figure out whether this may have helped or not during the next installment of the Hacktivism Hour. But for now, we'll get some music, I think.
I'm feeling all right, despite my better judgment. I just want your body.
go online nowadays, everywhere you look, there are websites full of child pornography. Pedophiles don't just share their pictures on safe and secure channels anymore. No, they use easily accessible public websites. But we have a solution. We're going to put a big warning sign on every bad website. With this, we're following a tactic that's been tried and tested in the real world for years. Just look away. Of course, some critics say we should actually delete the sites. Just like banks all over the world remove fraudulent phishing sites within a few hours. But most child porn websites are hosted in very poor countries. They just don't have the resources. Requesting deletion here would be very difficult. And blocking sites has another advantage. The organization behind the site gets an immediate warning. This will help save the resources of police forces and the courts, because the criminals themselves will help out by removing their illegal images. And there's another advantage to creating our own list of links to illegal websites. Eventually, even the pedophiles that have disabled our blocking system will find out which sites are definitely not allowed. Of course, it will cost a lot of money to set up our system, money that some people say could be invested in prevention or in therapy to help the victims of child pornography. But remember, our multifunctional blocking system will do much more. It will be extended to help people around the world who are victims of gambling, terrorism, copyright infringement, criticism, political opposition, freedom of speech, and democracy. Even China, North Korea, and Iran are already using a successful website blocking system to protect their freedom and democracy. Let's follow them into the future for a cleaner and safer internet. Cleantonet, for a cleaner and safer internet. Cleantonet.org.
So much safer already. And we'll sleep tight as a baby tonight. Anyway, you, before the Cleantonet bit, you listened to the song I Just Want Your Body by Hot Fiction. And our excellent music choice of tonight is by GMC, basically, not my lousy music. And after that piece of music, listen to the soundtrack of the video, which you can also watch on cleantonet.org. And check it out. It's a wonderful piece of viral marketing against the internet filters. And the video also mentions lovely regimes such as China. And Koen has also been discussing a little bit with a hacktivist in Toronto who was especially interested in Tibet, if I recall correctly. Is that right, Koen?
Correct, yeah. I spoke to Nathan Freitas. He is with the... let me look this up. It's basically... Oh, no, I forgot the name of the organization. That's what you get with life. It's the Tibet Action Institute. And basically, he works with the Tibetan government in exile and activists all around the world. Basically, to... to empower them and to perform some hacktivism, and he does wonderful stuff. Actually, he does not only do this on the net. He also goes out on the streets, basically with technology, to make a point.
Well, sounds interesting. Shall we just start the interview?
Let's see. We can do that. I hope.
Yeah. So you're with the Tibetan Action Institute, right? Yeah. What is it exactly you're doing there?
We do, by our motto, open source strategy, training, software for Tibetan activists and their supporters to help them engage in campaigns more effectively. And when we say campaigns, we mean everything ranging from online outreach and trying to connect with Tibetans inside Tibet and around the world in exile, to real world protests and days of action and movements. So when the president of China shows up in India and Delhi and give them tools to do really interesting things, being an activist for a while, I've sort of, while taking to the streets and throwing your body at the cops and all that, it still has its place. There's quite a bit more that you can do through communications technology, you know, not just internet, but a variety of tools. And Tibetans specifically are really interested, excited, and eager to kind of learn and use these technologies, mostly because they've seen what the Chinese government and patriotic hackers have done with them against them.
Oh yeah, so they've sort of this thing where a lot of their computers got infected, right?
Yeah.
At least that's supposedly done by the Chinese government. We can't prove it, but
yes. So the, you know, sort of vast malware botnet attacks that have gone on for multiple years that have peaked in some pretty significant attacks or networks like GhostNet, for instance. It's just been a call to arms a bit for Tibetans to say we better like get our, you know, gear on. And
okay.
You know, it's time to upgrade beyond Windows, you know, ME. So more Tibetan activists than you would expect run some variant of Linux, you know,
okay.
or understand a bit more about things like, you know, using HTTPS everywhere plugins or social engineering as well, actually, something they've learned the hard way quite a bit about. So it's fun work, it's interesting. I'm not Tibetan myself, but my partner in Tibet Action Institute, Laden Tatong, is a Tibetan woman who you know, runs OpenPGP and encrypted ZRTP voice on everything, you know, so she sort of represents this empowered activist.
Nice. So, but that's mostly on the defensive side, you know, right? Installing Linux to be less vulnerable. Is there also some kind of more going into the attack, actively retaliating, so to speak? Or
I think the times we've done that have been where it started defensively, where in 2007 there was essentially a denial of service attack on our mobile phones. So some of the phone numbers had been made public, had spread onto Chinese messages, forums, BBSs, and then those numbers were being attacked using Google SMS, free tools, VoIP tools, automated call, like war dialing essentially to shut down the phones. And I tracked it back to this message board in some sort of third tier Chinese town and found the source who originated the call to, you know, to attack, essentially, you know, an anonymous style type, you know, day of action against us, but they weren't anonymous. So in that case I decided to take action back against them and did what I could to make that user's life hell, just because it was so far beyond any sort of rule of law, or, you know, even with the US authorities kind of wanting to know what was happening, nothing was, we needed our phones to work.
Yeah.
So there's been that case. Otherwise, some other sort of offensive tools that we've used are more things like satellite modems, encrypted phone technology, things that allow us to get around, send inside of China and get around the firewall, so that when we have people do protests or documenting things in remote areas, we can use sat phones to upload video and clips that otherwise wouldn't get out. So really just trying new creative ways around the sort of mass censorship that we see.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm myself in activism, I believe, well, you have to abide by the law, but sometimes it is allowed to sort of step over it a bit and go into civil disobedience. Have you ever felt the need or to go farther than what is allowed? I mean, circumventing the censorship, for example, that's supposedly illegal in China.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so in real life, not in real life, but in sort of meat space, I've chained myself to Chinese consulates and embassies. You know, I've been arrested and I've done these things. I've performed civil disobedience and been in jail for short periods of time.
Okay.
So in online world, I there's this balance of I'm willing to do that, but I also don't want to violate what I feel is this sort of sacred ground of the nets, you know, and I don't want the network to be worse. So some of the things that we've done, though, we actually sent a bunch of people to Beijing during the Olympics, and we did Bluetooth spamming, for instance, in crowded areas. We built little access points that were self-contained and that advertised the SSID like Starbucks or free Wi-Fi and placed them around Beijing. And when people accessed those accidentally, they were given sort of freedom messages and copies of Tor and things like that. So, so these sort of tactics to say let's use sort of impersonation attacks. So yes, and I stop the line at pure malware, botnet, sort of DOS. I feel like those to me reduce the function. And specifically when you're working with China, that's the whole battle, is they're trying to break the network and we want it to work better.
You want to use it.
Yeah, yeah. Use it. So I feel like I don't want to say that DOS attacks are not civil disobedience. I think they can be. But in this context, it's counterproductive.
Okay, yeah. So this is what you've been you have been concentrating on, right? The mobile media, mobile technology, using that for activism.
Yep.
You've been working on a port for Android of the Tor project.
Yes.
And there's also something about Guardian. Can you tell us a bit about that?
So the Guardian project is this sort of sister project to Tor and a number of other projects, where we are porting existing Linux-based security applications and tools to Android. So Android is Linux, but with a certain amount of new user interface needed. But underneath, there's cross-compiling tools, the Android NDK, where with very little work, you can have GPG, libgcrypt, Lux encryption, Tor, ZRTP for SIP working, and you just need to build usable interfaces on top of them. So I have a background in mobile software, and we're focused on porting the known C layer, and then putting a Java UI, and not just UI, but integrating with the service, background services, integrating with the dialer and things. So we are focused on a complete open source stack. And we also want to just build solutions for activist groups that work. So someone will come to us and say, we need to send someone to XYZ country, and we need them to have a secure way of talking to us. So we'll just find the best solution. So for instance, Moxie Marlin Spike's Text Secure is a free app. It's not open source, but it's free and it works. And he's a known member of sort of the open source hacker community, and we trust it and it works. So there's a usability issue of how do you put this insanely great, powerful security open source stuff into people's hands that are not technologists. So we do training, porting, training, and sort of evangelization.
Excellent.
And so the Tor port, which is called Orbot, it's available in the Android market and also directly through Tor, is one of our first big pieces, and we think it's works pretty well. We have users all around the world, so we're check it out on your Android.
If people want to know more about the Guardian project, can they go to a website? Or?
Of course, yeah, guardianproject.info.
Okay.
And also just search for Orbot, O-R-B-O-T, in the Android market.
Android market.
Yeah.
So before we go, there's people waiting for us. In your bio, I read something about groundbreaking technology for activism utilizing lasers and satellite modems.
Yes.
Tell us, lasers.
Yeah. So actually, I worked with the Graffiti Research Lab and the FAT Lab in New York, which they've done a bunch of work actually out of with the Netherlands-based hacker who I'm spacing on his name. Anyway, they use lasers, but they use them for art mostly. You're just free speech. We partnered around the Beijing Olympics to say, what if we took your sort of lasers? Laser tag's a system where you can draw words and project it on walls from far away and say anything you want. So we thought, what if you put that in Tiananmen Square? So, but we quickly realized that carting around all like big projectors and stuff in Tiananmen Square wouldn't happen. So we worked together with James Powderly of the Graffiti Research Lab, and using very large custom-built sort of green lasers that looked like lightsabers essentially, and put a stencil on them, so that essentially we could you could be almost a mile or two away, And as long as you had clear line of sight, you could project an image three stories high with a green laser. And so we built that, you know, funded that. We have photos online, if you search Graffiti Research Lab, of this working in New York. And then James went to Beijing to do this projection, laser projection in Tiananmen Square, and he got arrested on the second day carrying two very powerful green lasers and was in a Chinese jail for 6 days, like interrogated general population. But the design is on Instructables.
Okay.
It's called the Green Lantern.
Ah.
And, you know, we hope other people utilize it. Eventually it'll happen.
That is a very nice.
And we also built the first LED banner. So most of the time when you see protest banners, they're in daytime. We wanted to do a banner at night. So we built, on cloth, we built individual LEDs, spelt the words out, and you could roll it up. And and so we had them pull it out in front of the bird's nest in the Beijing Olympics, and they were arrested too. And the funniest image is of the cops walking around with this like light bright banner, not knowing how to turn it off, lit up with 1,000 blue LEDs. So.
Beautiful. It's not without dangers, but these are some inspiring projects. Thank you for talking to me.
Of course.
I think we have to run because it sounds like they've already left.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, we're going to wrap up the show as a whole anyway. After the music, Telecomics will take over for a first for them. They've produced about half an hour of talk radio on the Telecomics stuff. And we are very happy to announce that they will probably be producing a monthly something from now on anyway. So I wish them all the best. Anyway, we'll be leaving while listening to Mission 2010 by Sébastien Gramont. And thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
911 for assistance.